Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features Keyshawn Warner, co-founder at Massachusetts-based retailer Dazed Cannabis. This episode was recorded online September 21st, 2023. Story, trying to figure out kind of what gave you the impetus to want to get into this industry in the first place. Like, what was your story coming into the cannabis industry?
So just in general, I've been a long time consumer of cannabis throughout my years, probably from like my early teenage years, off and on outside of playing sports. But what really got me into looking at the cannabis industry from a business perspective was my wife and I would go on couples trips, and we would always go to Breckenridge in Colorado. And, you know, Denver being one of the first states to legalize recreational cannabis, you know, at that time when I went, it was legal. And so my first stop was to, you know, a dispensary. I had to check it out, see what it was like. You know, I heard all the hype. So when I went, the dispensary wasn't what I expected it to be. It was basically a small trailer in the middle of nowhere, you know, that had that serviced medical and recreational patients. So when you came inside of the trailer, you just had one small room that was the medicinal room for the medical patients, and then another small room for recreational patients. So, you know, I come in now and I'm looking around, and it's literally a desk. On the other side of the desk are the employees, and then us on one side. Tiny operation. On the wall, however, you know, aside they have posters and stuff like that, informational flyers, but they also, I guess for the local audiences, have to have the permits, the state and local permits listed on the wall. And on those permits also had listed the amount and the frequency that they had to pay for those permits. So, you know, I'm doing a little bit of quick math and I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of money that they're spending, you know, monthly, quarterly, or however the amount of the frequency was, and just in permitting fees. And then I'm looking, I'm like, well, this small place with these, you know, small staff is churning out the amount of money that it would take just to cover the permits. Not talking about rent, no payroll, or anything else. I'm like, yeah, they're making some serious money in here. You know, a light bulb went off, and then that's it. I just started like really looking into the legal market heavy. Fast forward a couple of years, then legalization was coming to Massachusetts, the first state on the East Coast to go, you know, fully rec. And once they started, you know, announcing that, and they were holding town hearings at their city hall, I would take, you know, some time off, drive up there, and for every hearing that they had, I was sitting present, you know, just trying to figure out what's going on. Is there an opportunity for me to get into the market up there, and just trying to position myself? And then, you know, but nothing happened at that moment. Fast forward another couple of years now, to 2020, 2021, during the pandemic. My current partner, Chris Vianello, is reaching out and sends like a couple of cold calls and cold emails to my wife, because he happened to see us that we had applied interest to a project that he had in the cannabis space previously that, you know, never materialized into anything. And he was just cold calling again because they had another opportunity. And so she's like, hey, listen, this guy's been cold calling and leaving me messages and emails. I'm not sure what it's about, but something about a cannabis business, I don't know. You look into it, that's your thing, it's up to you. And I was like, oh, this could be a scam, you know, scamming. They're here now, and that's what I assumed, you know, was the case. But then at the same time, something in the back of my mind said, but what if? Just call and see. So I called, and off of a 45-minute phone call, I was like, this guy, you know, seems to be, you know, serious. And so subsequent to that, we set up another in-person meeting and, you know, met in person and talked and just got a vibe check from each other. And then a couple of weeks later, you know, we made agreements and, you know, we got into the legal market in Massachusetts.
Nice. Well, I mean, in the Massachusetts market in and of itself, you know, being such a small state and kind of being surrounded by all these states that have all these consumers, I mean, that's a crazy time to want to get into the space in and of itself, because you got so much action going on, so much money being flooded into the state. Right. When you finally decided that you guys wanted to open up in New York City and you guys wanted to kind of do this kind of in what's going to be the largest market, I believe, in the Northeast, arguably one of the top three markets in the country. What made you want to finally leap from the Massachusetts market into the Empire State?
So, we're always looking for, I'm always looking for opportunities to expand and just, see what's next on the horizon. And once I found out that New York now was, trying to pioneer a new program to not only bring the recreational market into New York, but also give, the first hand, the upper hand to people who were, targeted in the war on drugs and who had, marijuana convictions, I was like, oh man, that's amazing. And now I'm just waiting to see what the criteria was. Of course, anybody, business-wise wants to be in New York City, regardless of what industry it is, because it's the epicenter of the financial world. It just is what it is. So of course, any opportunity, to do business in New York, you're going to jump at. And so once, I just waited to see what the requirements would be, and they came out, I was like, wow, hold on. So I'm looking at all the requirements. I'm checking one box. Okay, I meet that requirement. Look at the next one. I check that box. The next one, so forth and so on. I was like, oh my God, I checked all the boxes to be able to even submit an application, because you had to, meet certain qualifications. One, which was, and the most important one was, you had to have been affected somehow by the war on drugs, meaning you yourself, a parent or a guardian, were arrested for marijuana convictions during the war, the war on drugs. Second caveat was you had to have been at least a 30% equity owner in a business that was successful, that would can be confirmed via federal and state taxes. And I was able to check that box. And then there were other caveats as well, and then other documentation that you had to be able to provide to, meet the requirements to submit the application. And so I did, and we submitted the application. And at that point, it was just a waiting game. But, just to get back to it, I mean, like I said, that was the main impetus for wanting to come to New York. The opportunity was there. New York, again, like we both agree, is the number one market for most industries in the world. So it was just, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys are obviously coming a far way from your experience in Colorado. Obviously, a lot of retail has definitely moved away from there. Me being, Californian. Obviously, during the Prop 215 era, we had the same thing. But retail has definitely taken a step beyond. One thing that you guys have that is very, definitely, what's the best way to say this? One thing that you guys have that is definitely a cornerstone in the retail experience is being able to come into what's an inviting environment, right? So you guys have definitely well-lit area. It looks really great. When you guys were deciding kind of what you wanted your retail experience to be, how did you decide on like, hey, these are the colorways we want to have for our, our bud room. These are the kinds of couches that we want to have to make people feel warm and welcome. These are the type of lighting. Like when you were building out your retail space, kind of walk me through what the thought process was.
What we noticed, my partners now, excuse me, Chris Vianello and Richard Raynone, what we noticed was the majority of dispensaries that you would visit, being that, the legal market first, came from the medical portion of it, kind of say, the majority of dispensaries that you would go in also still had like a sterile clinical feel. And so, that just wasn't representative of who we were and what our, weed backgrounds were. We didn't smoke weed when we were young or growing up or consume or share weed with our friends in the clinical aspect. It was some place that was surrounded by music, food, your friends hanging out. It was, about having a good time. And so that we definitely wanted to get away from that medical clinical feel. And also we wanted our place to be, we wanted our dispensary to give a feel where you come in, you're relaxed, you want to hang out. That's why we have like chairs set up a certain way where you can come. We have lounge chairs. We have TVs where sometimes we'll host like the local boxer, Denzel Whitley in the Holyoke area. When he fights, we'll broadcast his fights on a TV. So, we try to make, we wanted the environment to be real comfortable. And that's how we came off the pink color. Pink, we looked up different attributes of different colors and what they, the effect that they have on us psychologically. And pink was one of those colors that gave a nice, warm, comfortable, inviting feel. And so, you know, that's kind of where the color palette came from. So we took a lot of time to really think about the different aspects of the business because, you know, aside from, you know, cannabis, which sells itself, you know, what else are we providing a customer when they come into, you know, our store? And that kind of was the driving factor behind, you know, the way we chose different colors and lighting and even the seating.
Well, and when you're looking at New York City, obviously one of the biggest problems that legal operators have been having as of recent is the rampant illicit market that's going on in New York. One of the things that's helped kind of proliferate that, which could be a positive or negative to a business operator, you know, down the line, is the ability for New York to treat cannabis in the same manner as tobacco. So you're allowed to openly smoke it. What do you feel like the city has done to kind of help legal operators in making sure that the illicit market isn't, you know, stealing away a vast majority of the customers that should be going through the legal pipeline? And with that smoking aspect, are you concerned with the potential social use down the line and the ability for, say, you know, dispensaries to have that kind of that experiential aspect that some of the dispensaries, say, on the West Coast are now having with their social use lounges?
Well, to answer the first question about the illegal market, the city and the state, you know, they're doing what they can to combat that. You know, I've been seeing on the news and from reports like everyone else that they're, you know, first they were targeting the stores themselves, and then I think now what they're trying to do is step up efforts that they're, you know, going to the building owners to, you know, talk to them about, you know, the stores that they're allowing to run in their buildings. As the state quotes, you know, illegally and as, you know, deemed as money laundering. So, you know, that's something that the state is working on. Just like any other industry, there's always a black market. The black market has always existed. I know the state is going to do everything that they can in their possible in their power to combat that. My thing as a business is not to worry about the illegal market. Because there always is one, just like there are handbag, luxury handbags. There's a knockoff market for that. Louis Vuitton, Gucci, they don't necessarily worry about that because they worry about running their business. And that's kind of how I attack, you know, the same thing. I worry about the business in front of me. I handle what I need to handle and making sure that the business that I'm in charge of, you know, provides a great service to the community and our customer base that comes in. And, you know, the authorities, they'll handle the other side as they can. As far as the social consumption lounge aspect, like California, I believe that's what you were asking about. I'm welcoming that. I hope that comes in because what it'll do is it'll give, you know, people a place that they can comfortably and safely consume products that they know came from, you know, the legal market that they can feel, you know, safe that there isn't any contaminants that may cause like fentanyl, for instance. We all seen a rise in cases where fentanyl is now getting to the marijuana population, which is crazy to hear. You know what I'm saying? And it's tragic. So, you know, social lounges would be great. New York City is a city that legalized public consumption in the same places that you're allowed to smoke cigarettes. Some love it, some hate it. You know, and for I think. Even for a marijuana consumer who I enjoy smoking outside and, you know, in the weather, just the same way I enjoy having a nice glass of wine outside and it's like you go to Central Park, you part of your picnic basket, you have a bottle of wine because it's nice to sit outside, have a you know, a sandwich and a glass of wine. Same way I like to consume my cannabis. But I also realize that, you know, the same way I don't necessarily like cigarette smoke, others may not necessarily like cannabis smoke. And I'm aware of that. And so, you know, having social consumption lounges would be that happy medium for, I think, for everybody, for us cannabis smokers who would like to, you know, partake with friends and family and others who also consume in a place that we know is comfortable, inviting, and safe. And I think that may help, you know, with those in the city who, you know, don't like the smell of cannabis. You know, now they know it may not be so prevalent as much, you know, as possible.
Well, and one of the things, you know, from a business aspect, is kind of, you know, the ability to have your consumer kind of in a space that, you know, that you have under control, that you're able to either upsell or, you know, talk directly to the consumer. People are taking the cannabis out on the street. I'm thinking about it more from a business aspect. Like, you know, people on the West Coast are able to keep, you know, consumers for a long period of time at the dispensary. You can do upsell party and stuff like that. Are operators within the New York area concerned about the possibility that social, because of how open it is, that social consumption might not become a part of the retail aspect of the industry? Or do they feel like that eventually regulators will kind of add that aspect on where it's like, hey, you know, you can section out a piece of your dispensary, you can smoke in there kind of thing. What's the industry talk kind of going on right now in New York?
Well, I believe it's definitely wanted both by both, you know, business people on the business side and consumers. And it is coming. It's definitely going to roll out. The state, you know, they're dealing with other things now that might have slowed the rate of that rollout to happen. But I believe they want that to happen. And you know, it was kind of like written in the law, not the law, but the rule books that, you know, some licensees who got, you know, the first license will also be almost grandfathered in to allow them us to operate on site and social consumption lounges. That could change, who knows? But I, for one, am definitely hoping that happens, because, like you said, from the business aspect, you know, it's the Starbucks effect. People go to Starbucks, they sit down, they have meetings, they work, they take classes, you have a cup of coffee over the course of time. If you're sitting there long enough, then you'll have a croissant. Then you have something else. Then, you know, maybe on the way out, okay, I'm leaving, but let me grab one more cup of coffee. And so that would be the ideal thing from a business aspect, because we can, you know, you grow your customer base, you begin to, like Apple, you begin to acquire or attract those people who identify with who they are personally to your brand. And now you start begin to grow your brand loyalty. And now you start to, you know, have the same people who will come all the time because they love your space. They love what you provide. They associate and align themselves with who you are and what they deem your business is about. And that's how you carve your niche out the market. And once you're able to do that, then I feel that gives you your business, it gives you your ground to stand on. And, you know, when times get hard, you can rely on that core set of business, the people who really love and invest in your brand to sustain you through the hard times. And then now when things get a little bit better, now as you continue to grow and market and build your customer base, you know, you really can pad your business up and then you start to grow and you multiply. And now when you're looking at trying to grow into other areas, you now come into a new environment, the word escapes me right now, but you come to a new location with a built-in following. So now when you want to expand to a new location, now you're not just a brand new establishment popping up. You're an extension of a brand that now say, hey, you know, is now in your location, your city, you know, your market, that, you know, helps to, you know, pick up the rate of you know, exceed your business operation in the new market. So,
well, in looking at New York, I mean, again, New York, one of the most massive markets for any industry in the world. And you're looking at kind of what the potential of the New York market could be. I mean, just on the social consumption side, like I'm looking at places on the West Coast, like Planet 13, you know, massive superstore kind of thing where they're trying to keep people literally 24 hours a day. I believe they're opening up a nightclub now that the social consumption sunset clause has ended in Nevada. When you're looking at New York and you're looking at kind of the nightclub scene and the entertainment scene, like what is the future of that potential in the social consumption lounge space? I mean, to me, I could see people staying at dispensaries literally all day and night, you know, just you wake up there. Hey man, I'm going to go to the dispensary, get some breakfast, get some lunch. And then by the time the nightclub opens up, I'm going to be at the nightclub.
Well, listen, if the state allows us the opportunity to build something like that out, then I'm definitely on the list, and sign me up. We'll have chicken and waffles in the morning. We have brunch, you know, brunch and blunts. Then lunchtime, we have something for lunchtime. We'll have a hotel, everything, all in one. It'll be a mini cannabis Vegas right here in New York City.
Well, and as far as dealing with the regulators, California notoriously the BCC now, the DCC has been kind of a laissez-faire approach with a lot of operators in the sense that they won't give them direct information on how to actually be compliant. It's more of like, when you do something wrong, I'm going to slap you down, but I'm not going to actually tell you how to do things right. Being that New York is such a new market, how has it been working with the regulated body within the state? And have they been taking notes, say, from states that have kind of dropped the ball on how to treat retailers, and kind of incorporated that into their business? Or is there still more for the regulated bodies in New York to learn, from operators?
Well, New York is, again, is a brand new market. So there's still a lot more for just the industry itself to grow. Regulators, ourselves, the compliance. So is we're in a massive growth point period right now. Anytime you get into an industry or you're opening a business that is highly regulated, whether it be, pharmaceuticals, alcohol, stuff like that, that's the main thing that you worry about as a business owner. What are the regulators going to be like? Are they going to come in? Are they going to be on my back? Are they going to be jerks? Are they going to help me? What's the case? And you always feel like their number one job is to get out like the boogeyman and get you, hide in the shadows, and then, oh, you made a mistake, gotcha. But what I can say is, delightfully, that has not been the case with this rollout from, with the OCM with New York. Right before, during our most tense time when we were trying to the day 2 days before our opening of our pop-up in April, we were like, pins and needles. We were up running around getting inventory checked in. It was just a madhouse. And on top of that, we had, the state regulator to come in. And the first things that these two women told me were, "We're not here to get you in trouble. We're here to help you make sure that you have everything that you need to pass compliance. So we're not, it's not a gotcha moment. We're here to work together to make sure that this goes successful." And that's all, you look for and you ask for as a business owner is for the regulators to work with you, because it's like, okay, this is a legal market. We've gotten a license to open it. So basically, we're kind of in business together, because the better I do, the more tax revenue I can generate, that goes to the state. So instead of trying to wait for me to fumble and then, penalize me, give me, work with me to help me assure that I don't fumble, because I want to run a good, successful, compliant business, and I'm gonna do everything in my power. But, I didn't write the compliance, so I don't know all the compliance steps. I'm making myself aware, but with your help, this can be the role, I can be that much better. And so it's been, they've been really gracious to us. They've worked with us. But again, the market is still growing. The regulators do have a lot to still roll out and implement. But it's a work in progress. And if we all work together, it should be fine. I think that they probably did look at some states that already had legalization going on and took some bullet points. But I believe that New York is trying to, write everything from scratch the way New York does. And, for better or for worse, it is what it is. And here we are.
Well, I think based on a lot of the states that I've been seeing, it's definitely for the better to start from scratch. Very glad to hear that they're working with you and they want to see you succeed. I know that there's a lot of states right now where a lot of retail operators are feeling that that isn't the case, that the state's working against their best interests. Now that you have kind of established yourself in the New York market, you guys are starting to kind of look at possibly other opportunities within the state. When you guys are kind of taking in kind of your KPIs within your business and you guys are deciding, hey, now's the time to move, similar to what you guys did with Massachusetts into the New York market, what are some things that you look at as a business operator to say, like, yeah, this is the time, the place, the deal, everything's right, let's go?
It just it's all about the opportunity in front, and then we do like a lot of serious evaluations to see if it all makes sense, if the locale is accepting of, a cannabis dispensary in the area. What's the demographics in the area as far as like for workforce? Because we try to hire from within the area. So, you know, we do a demographic search and just check out, you know, who's, you know, what's the employment rate like there? Who is least employed, you know? So that way we can see who might benefit the most from, you know, employment. You know, what the taxes are in the area. You know, foot traffic, street traffic, any, if there's any public transportation that goes back and forth. What would be the closest potential other dispensary in the area? You know, when will it come? So those are a lot of things that we look at, the measures that we take when we try to decide, you know, if it's an area, if the market makes sense to get into.
Well, and when you're kind of looking at the state as a whole right now, obviously, like you kind of said, it's very brand new. A lot of people are still trying to figure it out. When you're looking at, say, the licensed offerings, what are you seeing as a business operator as far as what's moving within your market? Obviously, on the West Coast, there's been a large push towards dog walkers, 0.3s, 0.5s, as far as pre-rolls are concerned. Flowers taking a dip in Nevada compared to edibles. Like, what are you seeing in the Empire State right now as far as consumption is concerned?
Well, in the Empire State, it hasn't, the market, again, the rec market is so brand new, it's so, you know, infantile, that it has not really established any like direction just yet. It's still in this early phase of, hey, we got legal dispensaries, it's great, let's go check it out, whatever's in is what I'm going to buy just to have the experience. I think we're going to need about another year of like dispensaries being open constantly, at least for a year, to have, you know, a better track on what the environment, you know, is kind of leaning towards. What I'll say, just from like the short time that we were open during our pop-up session, though, in the area that my store is in, dog walkers, pre-roll packs, pre-roll minis, and surprisingly, but not really, single pack, single serve seltzers were doing great. Reason being, we're right next to a park and people like to go outside and walk around. We're in the area that, you know, people walk around a lot. We're in the middle of NYU and by Union Square. Union Square Park is an area that you know, people like to hang out, sit outside, they skateboard. We're in a transient area. So something that's easy, quick, they can grab and go and consume as they're walking around on the lunch break, going to and from, or just hanging out outside was, you know, a big hit in our area. And I would assume that's probably going to be the trend in New York, because you think in New York, everybody commutes mostly by foot or by bike, you know, because, you know, it's a big congested city. So I think, you know, the easy thing for most people is something that they can grab and go.
Well, and honestly, and I know I don't have you for too much longer, and I appreciate the time you've given, but honestly, like when you're in such an early set market, as an operator, that's almost the hardest part to figure out. Like, how do you figure out what to stock? You know, like you're like, okay, well, I'm in this specific area. We don't have any real state data yet. We don't have any real demographical data yet. How do you decide what to put on your shelf and what to kind of give direction towards for the consumer without having that data?
And that is the golden ticket to, you know, success in early, you know, your early inventory management. For me personally, what I did was I just sat outside every day in the environment and watched and people watched. And I watched, you know, who was holding well, who had the Starbucks cup, what, you know, at what time, where was the traffic, you know, flowing from? The majority of people walking from east to west, north, south. What were they carrying? Did they have Starbucks? Did they have Dunkin'? You know, do they normally stop at this corner store rather than the corner store across the street? You know, they need to go in McDonald's and sit down for a while. I just paid attention to the environment to get a feel of the environment. And that would, you know, help to give me an idea of what potentially, you know, people may want to buy. You know, do we have a younger demographic that walks by? Is it an older demographic? Does it seem like it's a demographic that's more affluent that may be more likely to spend a lot in one time as opposed to a demographic of people who will spend less at a time but come more frequently? You know, so these are the things that, you know, I had to take a look at, especially in a market that doesn't have really any real data points to draw from to look at as a comparison. And that's what helped me. And so, you know, when we started to do our first inventory intake, I kind of leaned away from buying large packaged items, for instance, like ounces. I stayed away from that because, again, like I said, my environment is a environment where people are walking to and from. We have two major train stations that are let out right in front of the store. So people are coming in and out the train station like ants into an anthill. So what that led me to believe or to, you know, feel as an instinct is I'm not going to have the customers going to come and buy an ounce to that degree, because an ounce requires you sitting down, relaxing, you know, hanging out with friends. The area that we're in, people are moving back and forth constantly. So we need to have things that somebody can grab, throw in their pocketbook, throw in a book bag, you know, throw in the purse and go on about their business. And then after that, it would just, you know, hit or miss.
And that's the kind of the nature of the beast. One of the things that, you know, I gotta definitely ask before I let you go, is when you're looking at the future of Dazed Cannabis with your co-founders, what does a 5-year out look like for you guys? Are you guys going to become more than just the 2-state operator? Are you guys going to open up a bunch more dispensaries within the Empire State and focus on that as a majority? Like, what's the future in the next 5 years hold like for you guys?
Oh, we have a lot of future aspirations. Just on the storefront alone, we're looking at, you know, we're all East Coast boys, all three of us. So we're looking at having dispensaries up and down the East Coast that we can drive from state to state and stop at each store. So that would be like a 4-5, 10-year goal. Along with that, we're looking at, we also threw out the idea of at some point creating a nonprofit where, you know, for like young entrepreneurs, like an incubator where young cannabis entrepreneurs who have great ideas may have gotten a license, you know, or some form, but don't have the equity or the capital or the ability to raise the capital to get their idea off the ground. Because we realize, you know, and that's the, I think the best thing about what New York is doing is in the cannabis industry, there are a lot of people who have great ideas, who have great businesses, who are starting from the grassroots, you know, on the ground up, scraping together all the, you know, their pennies that they can to at least get to try to get a business started. But, you know, as you know, it takes serious capital, you know, to establish a business. And, you know, there is a lack of, because one is not federally legal, so you can't get your traditional business loan. It's all, you know, friends and family crowdfunded growth that you acquire your finances. But we think that will really help, you know, jumpstart some people, give some people a start in the cannabis industry. So we looked at that. You know, we work with a lot of young artists and people who are coming up in their career. And so we look to align with people like that who are, you know, have a grassroots movement in music, fashion, culinary arts, whatever it may be, because, you know, we like a lot of different things and we have groups and different and backgrounds and different things. So we got a lot, we have a lot on the roadmap.
We'd like to thank Keyshawn for being on today's episode. If you'd like to learn more about Dazed Cannabis, you can visit them online at www.dazed.fun. And as always, thanks for listening. We'll see you here on the next episode, Conversations in Cannabis.